M1240 and W240. This is WGBB AM 1240 and W240 DFFM 95.9 Freeport, New York.
The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to WGBB Sports Talk New York. I'm your host, Chris Caputo, tonight. Without my partner, a little bit under the weather, Mike Guidone, we're going to be talking a lot of college hoops tonight and a little bit of the NCAA flavor that's been going around. We'll talk a little bit of football with A.J. Rovner later on. Things are down a little bit here at the studio, but our producer, Brian Graves, doing a good job of trying to keep our guests up and the talk going. So we're going to get right into it tonight here on Martin Luther King weekend. Hopefully you have an extra day off tomorrow and you're able to get a few things done. Our first guest tonight, it was a former Division I men's head basketball coach. He was at St. Francis University in Pennsylvania. His name is Rob Krimmel. He stepped down, so-called retired, in March of last year after the team went to the NCAA tournament. And he's here tonight to tell us a little bit about it, his career, and his decision to step away. So, Rob, thanks for jumping in. I know we got a little bit different connection tonight, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Okay. So, Rob, you were an athlete in 1996 at St. Francis. You grew up in State College, Pennsylvania. So talk a little bit about your decision to go to St. Francis, you know, being that a person probably, what, an hour and a half away from that situation?
Yeah, and for anybody that knows that part of the country, State College is also known as Penn State. I think people are probably more familiar with Penn State than they are State College. So I grew up, both my parents worked at Penn State and grew up going to Penn State football games, basketball games, and in my mind I was going to a big school. And my first visit to St. Francis in the spring of my junior year, I went up and told my dad, I'm not going to St. Francis. And my dad's response was, well, why? I said, well, Dad, it's small. You know, the football field's smaller than my high school football field. And, you know, at that time, he let a, you know, 17-year-old run his mouth and, you know, think that I had all the answers. And 6 months later, I went up on my official visit, committed, and didn't leave for 29 years. So first impressions can be broken, and I'm certainly glad that my dad allowed me to run my mouth, but also help me open my eyes that there are things out there, you know, outside of Happy Valley and State College and Penn State. And there was a decision that allowed me to play Division I basketball, met my wife, got 2 degrees, had the opportunity to be around great people for 29 years, and a lot of great memories, both on the court and off the court. And it's a special place, and to have basketball as a part of that experience as a player, as an assistant coach, and then as a head coach was a lot of fun, a lot of great memories, and it put me in a position that I'm in today. And so I'm grateful for all that the university did for me and my family. And I know it's a little bit of a different situation right now as they embark on a different journey.
Yes,
but it was a great 29 years for me, and had the opportunity to win a championship and celebrate that with our alumni and the fans, and that was a pretty special moment too.
Yeah, so Rob, you and I are right around the same age. I follow a lot of this stuff. So you were able to graduate in 2000 and then get a master's in 2003, but during that time, you were coaching with the team, correct?
Yeah, and that's for those people that remember the restricted earnings days. So my first job as a basketball coach, I think I made $3,000, and it was an assistant's position. It wasn't a GA, it wasn't an ops. It was an assistant coaching position, and at that time, it was recruiting, it was scouting, it was player development, it was travel, it was study table. It was doing a little bit of everything. And so I was grateful for that opportunity because I think it really helped me prepare to be a head coach because of having to do all of the little things. But yeah, I went right into coaching. Actually, I was in the office before I graduated, doing some things to get ready. And in that opportunity, never really considered coaching. I was preparing to, you know, teach for a little bit, go to law school, and embark on a career as a teacher, lawyer, solicitor, and do things in that world. But the good Lord had a different plan for me and sent me into the coaching world.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about your career and towards the end a little bit. You know, I love watching the game you played against Central Connecticut. You know, you guys scored a basket late, got an extra free throw, and the other team didn't hit a foul shot. You wind up going to the NCAA tournament and you know, lose a tough one by 2 points, but, you know, to be in an NCAA game and have a chance to win, to possibly, I believe, play Auburn in the next round, had to have been a pretty memorable experience for you.
Yeah, and people always, you know, it's a weird conversation because, oh, you made the NCAA tournament. I'm so sorry to see the way you lost. And you know, it's, I think for anybody that is a fan or maybe doesn't follow basketball as seriously, yeah, it was heartbreaking. But in order to get to that point, we had to win three straight overtime games to end the regular season. Right. And then we won our three playoff games by 3 points.
Yeah.
So if that was the disappointment that we had to deal with, I'll take that any day. You know, to be able to be in a position to win a game in the NCAA tournament. But, you know, to get there, you know, we had to win some close games, and the ball did bounce our way quite a few times so that we were in that position. And if we had won that game, and give Alabama State credit, their kids made that play, and it was, you know, what a way to start March Madness. The craziest game might have been the first game of the NCAA tournament, and we would have gone on to play Auburn. But certainly a memorable experience for our guys. And for those people that don't know St. Francis, there's such a rich tradition. And when you think tradition, you know, sometimes like, yeah, it was the 50s and the 60s. But I always said, where you have tradition, you can have success, because even if that expectation comes from people in their 60s or 70s or 80s, there's still that extra push to want to be great. And we have a Hall of Famer. And Maurice Stokes, who, if you're a basketball junkie, you know who he is and how much he meant, not just to St. Francis, but to the game of basketball and what he stood for, and his relationship with Jack Twyman, that, you know, the two of them have an award named after him in the NBA. How many schools across the country can say that they have one of their alums on an NBA award? And St. Francis is one of those places. And then Kevin Porter, Norm Van Leer, so many people from the Golden Era. And this year we're going to retire Mike Isolino and Joe Anderson. Joe's the all-time leading scorer, and Mike was a player, the last player that got drafted into the NBA, played in the Dallas Mavericks, and is the all-time. I think he holds a single-season scoring record, and him and Joe teamed up to take St. Francis to their last NCAA tournament in 1991 before we were able to do it last year. And so there's a lot of tradition, a lot of success, and to be able to celebrate that with our alums and our families and our fans was pretty special last March.
Again, we're talking with Rob Krimmel, former Division I basketball coach at St. Francis University in Pennsylvania, small town called Loretto, Pennsylvania. Coach, about a week later, the school makes an announcement that they're going to transition from Division I to Division III. And I know you've spoken a lot about how this wasn't necessarily the only reason why you stepped down. You have Alex and Tommy boys that are now high school age. You were saying that there was probably two reasons you wouldn't coach somebody. Either you got fired or something family-oriented that was going to take you away from the game. Can you talk about just the first part, about how you were already thinking about stepping away from the game before the age of 50 or 60 years old?
I knew that I wasn't going to coach forever. I just, you know, the amount of time and energy, all coaches, you know, that you put into helping young men achieve their goals and represent a university, both from a community standpoint and on a global scale, when you're on TV playing against Alabama State or playing against Duke or one of the Blue Bloods. And there was something in me that I knew that it wasn't what I was going to do until I was 65 or 70 years old. And I knew that at some point I would have to transition to another career and do something that would allow me to be a dad first. Now, being a coach afforded me the opportunity to provide my kids with a lot of great experiences. I got to go to the Final Four. My oldest was on the bench when we played Duke and got to shake Mike Krzyzewski's hand. My boys both got to experience the NCAA tournament. So there were a lot of great memories and great things that were a part of being a dad and being a coach, right?
Sure.
I told our players every year that you make me a better dad because, you know, the struggles and the successes that they went through, I'm going to be more prepared as a father to handle, you know, those challenges when they come my kids' way. So, you know, it was something that was in me. And in fact, I met with our president and had spoken to a couple who was a priest and spoken to another priest friend of mine that just in the last year, I had felt like I was entering a different season of my life. I couldn't put my finger on it. I didn't know what it was. I love the group I was coaching last year. I love the challenge that was ahead of us, both kind of on a micro level institutionally, but on a macro level with some of the NIL and the portal stuff. But I just felt like there was something pulling at me, and it had been a slow build because there were a lot of times that I had missed significant moments in my kids' lives, and every coach can say that, and every, you know, you handle it differently. But my oldest had been in, I think, 5 championship games, and I hadn't seen one. I was missing school plays and missing, report cards coming home. And thank goodness I have a great wife who was able to weather the storm a lot of times. And my parents live close by and my in-laws are fantastic people. So there was a great support system around my boys and my family.
Right.
But at the end of it all, I told every recruit, judge me as a father. I don't care how many games we win. I don't care how many points we score. I don't care how many alcohol. Judge me as a father. I want to be known as a great dad. And so, you know, as I got older and my kids got older, I was looking at the window of things shrinking pretty quickly. My oldest just turned 16. He's going to start driving soon. And that's one layer as a parent where you take a step closer to your kids not needing you that much anymore, right? And I just wanted to experience that with my boys for the next 4 or 5 years. And it came at a time where there were a lot of things going on institutionally, but I felt that God put me in this position to make the decision, and with the support of my family and certainly the understanding of the institution, and it just felt right.
So the school decides to transition to Division III. They really didn't give anybody a heads up. It just kind of happened. And I know in the NEC, I had a friend of mine who was a women's coach at St. Francis in New York. They made the decision to disband athletics a couple of years before you. Can you talk a little bit about the scope of Division I basketball and maybe even other sports? And maybe are there other schools that are possibly thinking about disbanding athletics or bringing it down to a Division II, Division III level?
The challenge, you know, in college athletics, and especially being Division I, isn't new to a place like St. Francis, and it's not new to a lot of other schools our size, because there is a commitment to be a Division I institution, obviously with resources, and now when you add that layer of the NIL, it's not just about how nice your gym is or how well you travel. It's, you know, in a lot of ways, it's how much money do you have in the bank to do the things in addition to nice travel and nice gear and all of that other stuff. So, you know, it's something that the institution has had to evaluate every, you know, 10 or so years. And because I was around long enough, I've gone through a couple of those processes where, yeah, they had to look themselves in the mirror and say, hey, are we viable? Can we compete? And, you know, I don't know of any other institutions that are asking those same questions, but I do know that there are a lot of institutions out there that, you know, in order to, you know, keep budgets healthy and keep people employed and the things that it takes to run an institution, I think there are bigger things outside of just athletics. When you look at the number of kids, just the general student population, when you're relying on people to be in dorms and eat in cafeterias, I think it's a bigger issue than just
sure.
Division I athletics. But having said that, there's a level of commitment. If you're going to be Division I, be Division I. In fact, Dan Henry, one of our former players who actually just published a book, he's a young lawyer, just passed his bar, went to Stetson Law School, was from upstate New York around Buffalo, and just published a book about his experience at St. Francis. And one of the things that he said, and it kind of stuck with me, on his senior night, when we give the seniors an opportunity to say something at the last practice before we head into senior night, and he said, be D1 in everything that you do. And I thought that made a lot of sense, both on a small scale as a player. Like, if you want to be Division I, you got to work that way, you got to study that way, you got to prepare that way. You can't take days off, right? You have to be a D1 all the time. And it's the same thing institutionally. If you want to be a D1 school, you got to act like a D1 school. And then sometimes that does come down to how many resources you have and the ability to compete year in and year out with the challenges that are both immediate and maybe in the future. And I don't think anybody really knows what the landscape of college athletics is going to look like 5 years from now. And right. I think anybody that says they do is lying, because the NCAA has changed the portal 4 times in 4 years.
Yep.
Right. I mean, anybody that professes to know, like, hey, this is what it's going to look like even next year, I think is just blowing smoke. Blowing smoke, because there's still a lot of things that need to be figured out. So, in the short term, could there be other schools that are looking to make this decision? I'm sure people have to look at, can we do this? Can we keep the doors open
right.
with all of the other challenges that are out there in higher education? But, yeah. The institution made the decision that it did, and they felt that it was the best decision to move the institution forward. And, well, I'm certainly unfortunate, because I would have liked to try to run it back, see what it would have been like to defend something, right? That just that competitor in you.
Sure.
I would like that challenge. But again, God had a different plan. We certainly trust that he knows what's best. And hopefully the institution can flourish as they make that transition to the Division III level.
I know you handed it off to Luke McConnell, whose father was actually your coach. He was a 2012 yeah. grad, played for you. Was there any thought of sticking around for one more year and then handing it off to him to go to D3, or did you feel he needed the 1 year?
No, and he was the right person. And I told Father Malachi that when I made my decision. And when I made my decision was, I thought it was going to be harder. And not that it wasn't a challenge, but it was a lot easier. I knew it was the right time, but I also knew who the right person to transition St. Francis was. And no one better than Luke, because he lived it. His dad coached it. He'd been around it. And no one was going to do a better job, not only in the year that we were going to remain Division I, but in the transition to Division III, because he genuinely cares about the institution. He wants to be there. And I couldn't have done as good of a job recruiting, knowing that I was only going to be there for a year. That would have been really hard for me to say, hey, you know what, I'll do this for one more year and then pass it off. I couldn't recruit under those circumstances. The time that it would have taken to put a roster together, I've already seen more basketball games this year before January 1st than I'd seen probably in the previous 5 years of my kids. So,
right.
it was the right decision, not only for me personally, but for the institution, because he has done a better job than I would have. And I knew, because of his commitment to the institution and the type of person he is and his work ethic, he's the right guy to transition, have that year to get his feet wet, be a Division I coach, and then take the institution into the next realm of college athletics in the Division III world that they're gonna face here in a couple of months.
So that kind of brings us into a little bit of a transition, so to speak, about the transfer portal. I know this year they announced that the transfer portal will not open up until the championship game is done, which last year there were guys playing that were already entering the transfer portal, which was strange. But you're going to be transferring from Division I to Division III. What's the plan for those kids who are still have eligibility? Do you think that those kids would probably stick it out at a D3 level, or are those kids that are pretty much guaranteed to go into a transfer portal?
Yeah, certainly I can't speak for all of those kids, because there are only a handful of them left from when I was there as the head coach. And but I have had the opportunity to go back and see quite a few games and be around the program and try to be there as much as I can for Luke and the staff and help in any way I can.
But so, they're competing for Division I. They're doing well.
Right. And they're, had a crazy non-conference schedule, and Luke said, hey, listen, we're Division I. One more year, let's enjoy it, let's go to tournaments and play Florida and
make some money.
Make some money, right? Exactly. And most schools at this level have to do that anyway, and they're doing a good job now that they're in their peer group. They just played Central Connecticut, and it took Central Connecticut playing
98-90?
Otherworldly. Yeah, otherworldly to try to, you know, to win the game. I mean, and you look at all the statistics, and the one thing that, you know, that they couldn't do was, and Pat's done a great job with this, is too many fouls. You know, we fouled too much, and Central was able to get to the line, and they're skilled, they're talented. And, you know, the game before that, they had LIU on the ropes. I mean, they had the ball late with the chance to win the game, and LIU pulled away. So they're right there. They're really close. I mean, they're a few possessions away, but the margin between winning and losing is so narrow when you get to conference play.
Oh, yeah.
But the emotional gap, I mean, it stretches from here to where you are in New York. I mean, it's just the locker room is so different, but it's one or two possessions, and that's all it is. It's one or two possessions, and even when it's a 15-point game, you can look back to the first half when it was, you know, a 2 or 3 point game, and if you get 2 or 3 stops, or if you take care of the basketball for a little bit, now that last 4 minutes of the game isn't insurmountable. And you know, Luke and his staff are doing a great job putting the guys in a position to be successful, and like every year and every conference, it's going to be nutty all the way down to the wire.
I'm going to give you a hypothetical question, Rob. Go back a couple of years. You're probably around 44 years old. You guys just pull off an upset on a money game, a buy-in game, where you go to Pittsburgh, and I believe you beat them 80-70, correct?
Yep.
Okay. That season ends, and you guys somehow, I don't remember if you made it to the NEC championship, you make the NCAA tournament, okay? That's just hypothetical.
Yep.
Penn State calls you and says they want you to be their head coach. Would this decision of quitting at 47, 48 years old have still happened?
Yeah, I would have. I told everybody that, and every recruit, that I was going to retire as a basketball coach at St. Francis. I didn't have an agent. I wasn't looking to go, you know, to Penn State or to Temple or to Duke or to Kentucky or any of those. I wanted to make St. Francis special. And that really was rooted in when I got the job. Listen, transferring has been around since I was in college.
Yeah, we got one.
Right. I mean, it's just a little bit of a different version.
And you sat out a year.
Exactly. Now, back in the early, what would have been like 2010, 2011, kind of that window, you know, the Northeast Conference, we've always had really good coaches, and they've done a really good job evaluating players. And, you know, there was a stretch where the best players would stay for 2 years, and then they transfer to Clemson, or they transfer to, you know, to Cincinnati, or they transfer to Georgetown,
sure,
or they transfer to these big programs, right? But I didn't want that to happen at our place.
Right.
I didn't want it. And so every kid that came in, I told them, listen, I'm offering you a 4-year scholarship. This is it's not a 1-year, it's a 4-year scholarship. And I'm going to be here unless they fire me and my family takes a backseat to my job. I will retire as the basketball coach at St. Francis.
Gotcha.
And that's why that's one of the reasons I used the word that I did when I stepped down. I retired from college basketball coaching. I have no desire. I love the game more now than I did 2 years ago.
Right.
But I have no desire to get back in it because, again, what I said, my boys, you know, one's a sophomore and one's an eighth grader, and I want to make sure that I see them at least through their high school and their college years so that I can do my job raising my own two kids and not having to worry about 20 other 18 to 22-year-old kids. I just felt like it was time to make that transition. So, you know, people are probably saying, oh, yeah, they throw $1 million at you, you're going. Well, I liked where I was at. I liked the ability to build the relationships and develop the kids the way that we developed them. And the easy answer for me to say right now at 48, having done it, is no. But that's what I told every recruit.
Gotcha.
And I think if faced with that decision, I would have stuck to my guns and said, no, I'm gonna see this thing out at St. Francis.
Talking with Rob Krimmel, former St. Francis of Pennsylvania basketball coach. Rob, you transitioned out of coaching. What are you doing full-time now?
Yeah, I had no idea what I was going to do when I stepped away, Chris. I took some time to reflect and figure out what I wanted to do, right? And it came up pretty quickly that being around good people was a key. And then something where I could connect with my family, really my two boys, and a tremendous opportunity presented itself to become a financial planner with the people that had been our financial planners for close to 8 or 9 years. And so I'm about 4 months into my financial planning career, and it allowed my boys to stay in their school and be around their friends. My wife's got a tremendous job as a physical therapist. She's really successful at what she does and allowed us to stay with the the same address, same phone numbers, same schools, and that was important too. I wasn't going to leave the area because, again, my kids are in a really good spot and want to make sure that they have all that they need to be successful here in the next couple of years.
So, Rob, let me go. Keith Braxton, best player you ever coached?
Yeah.
Okay. If this NIL transfer portal was around back then, what do you think would have been thrown at him, and do you think he would have stayed?
No, I think he would have gone. Yeah. And I would have told him he needed to go.
Right.
I mean, because I think he would have been six figures.
So how do these other schools, not, you know, now forget St. Francis, but how do these other schools, say, and you know, a MAC and an NEC, how do they continue to compete year by year? Because you guys are used to going out and getting that freshman and developing him, and then sophomore year he's the, you know, first team, whatever. Junior year he's the player of the year. And in his fourth year, he's taking the NCAA tournament. Now, these guys come for 1 year. They average 17 points a game, and they're gone.
Yep. And it's, you know, I don't think any 2 years are the same. In my perfect world, my utopia, what I would do is, if I was going to do this for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years and things would remain as they are, I'd go with 13 scholarships. I'd try to find you know, a handful of kids, maybe two or three that, you know, we could redshirt so that, you know, you have them at least 2 years, because I think that's one of the hardest things is just planning. Right now, every kid in Division I basketball is thinking about the portal.
Of course.
And the ones that aren't, you know, are the seniors, right? The ones that are graduating. But everybody has some kind of, well, can I go? Should I go? Right? And so you're dealing with that in every single locker room right now, where it used to just be at the low major level. You never saw someone transfer from North Carolina. They're going to stay in North Carolina, even if they weren't playing a ton, because they're flying, they're doing all the great things, and they, you know. But now you see them, you know, at the highest level, they're moving side to side. So I would go grab a couple kids, you know, that might be, maybe they're a year away. Maybe it's a big kid that needs to put some weight on, or maybe it's a guard that, you know, that just doesn't shoot the ball great but really competes, or whatever the traits or the characteristics are. And then I, you know, build that around, you know, maybe a junior college kid or two, you know, take a transfer or two, but try to build it where there was stability year to year, that you weren't losing and having to replace 12 players, especially at this level. Because if you have to do it at this level, and you have to get 12 new guys every year or 10 new guys every year, you're going to have to get lucky. Yeah. You're going to have to get lucky and hope that you get the right players.
Exactly.
And that's, I think that's one of the reasons why we were able to have some success last year, is we were able to keep, I think, 8 guys from the previous year.
Right.
Seven guys, because we brought 6 in. And of the 6 that we brought in, it was a combination of freshmen, transfers, junior college kids, and, you know, that combination, the guys that were in the program already knew what to expect, so practices became easier. We didn't have to explain as much, so we could take the little details and start to build on those, instead of trying to just get guys to understand our ball screen coverage. We could talk about multiple ball screen coverages, or we could talk about multiple offensive actions. So that stability and being able to keep at least half your roster intact year to year, and not having to replace 12 guys because everybody's leaving, right? So it kind of a long-winded answer to your question. I would be year to year, but I would try to build it with 1 or 2 kids that maybe need to be redshirted, and that, you know, at least you're going to have them for 2 years. You develop them, they get stronger, they're in your program, you know they're good, but you know that maybe just not quite yet. And then you have a couple transfers, maybe an older kid or two, and then you've had some kids that maybe just stay 3 years because you know they're
not the top,
weren't good their freshman year, they weren't good, or they're going to places where it just isn't right. And I think there's going to be, if this thing stayed as it is, I think there are going to be more and more kids that you see that will stay a little bit longer, because they're going to be more failure stories of kids that go into the portal that think they're going to get something and they're stuck with nothing.
Yeah.
And they end up at, you know, a school out in the Midwest that they've never heard of, that's, you know, playing in the NIA or Division III or Division II. Like, they think they're going up in Division I. Well, not everybody can go up.
Yeah. It's,
you're dealing with a different number when you go into the portal, and then you have all the high school kids and the junior college kids. So I think it's more and more kids, and I hate to use the word fail, but you know, when you go into the portal and you don't have a place to go, shoot, just stay, if you have something good, stay there and make it great. And you're starting to hear a couple people say some of those things like, hey, think, what are you doing? You're getting your education paid for, right? Don't go into the portal. But I think too many people right now have
money.
Ears of these young kids and saying, go into the portal because Chris is getting $50,000. You should get $50,000. Well, that doesn't always happen.
Right.
And so, you know, the advice of going into the portal, you know, you have to be really careful when you're basing your opportunities on someone else's opportunities, because it's not apples and apples. A lot of times it's apples and oranges.
Coach, last question. If you could change one rule, what would it be in the NCAA basketball realm?
I've listened to Calipari and those guys talk. You can't this transfer stuff has got it. The money's already out. The money's gone.
So
like, that's can't control that. That's out of our, you know, you could put some parameters around it. And I know they have this NIL stuff where they, you know, they check on the deals and they deny them or whatever. That's fine. That's all well and good. You let the cat out the bag. That's done with. But I would put some kind of parameters on this whole transfer thing.
Yeah, maybe one free and you get 5 years to play four.
And something like that, right? And if you if the coach leaves, at that point you've got another opportunity. But
okay,
if the coach is still there, that's the one thing that I was, even back in the day, if like a coach would leave, let them go transfer and be eligible right away. Because here's the thing. Most kids are going to a school because of the coach.
Correct.
Right? Whether it's 50-50, set, they're going there because of the coach. They don't go there because they like the color blue or they like, you know, the trees that are on the mountain. They're going there because of the coach, right? And so I think a lot of that would help those kids then move on to another school, right? Just give them that year. One thing that we talked about in the office was, and it's not my idea. The original idea was by Andy Helton, who was our associate coach, and he said, "Listen, have 1 year scholarships, 2 year scholarships, and then 4 year. Right? Mm. If you want to bet on yourself, come in and sign a 1 year scholarship, and then at that point, the coach doesn't have to renew it." But if you sign a 2 year scholarship, you have to stay for the 2 years, or you have to pay back that extra year, some kind of penalty.
Right.
Right? If you want to get all 4 years, if you're a family that's saying, no, I love this place, I want the education, commit the 4 years. I mean, but something like that won't ever come into place. But we were talking about it in the realm of have some kind of parameters, have some kind of restrictions that, you know, that don't just allow, you know, kids to come and go as they please. And some of it too is the coaches. You know, the coaches are asking these kids to leave. I'm not removing the responsibility from the coaches either, but you know, this thing all came about when, you know, the talking heads in basketball said, well, coaches can leave whenever they want. Well, okay, let's stop comparing an 18-year-old to a 44-year-old,
right?
I mean, it's not as simple as that. So, you know, right now the 18-year-olds have more, I'd say power, but have more power than the 35, 45, 55-year-olds.
Right.
You know, and that was the big thing. Coaches can transfer whenever they want. They can leave their institutions. And I never really liked that argument, but that was one of the big reasons we're in this spot is because of that.
Well, Rob Krimmel, we appreciate you coming on, former St. Francis of Pennsylvania basketball coach, giving us some time, retiring as the school transitions to Division III, but a great insight into where college sports is right now. And, you know, we're going to get this interview up and out there, and we appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always good to be talking basketball this time of the year, albeit in a different set of circumstances. So thanks for allowing me to fuel my basketball fire, if not for a half an hour.
All
thanks,
right.
Chris.
Enjoy. Thanks.
All right.
Again, that was Rob Krimmel, former St. Francis basketball coach, who joined us on our podcast here. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back, talk some Giants right after this.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET. or online at countryfootcare.com.
Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
All right. Welcome back to WGBB Sports Talk New York. I'm Chris Caputo. My partner, Mike Guidone, is a little bit under the weather tonight. We are recording this podcast tonight. We just spoke with former Division I basketball coach Rob Krimmel, and we're now joined by our Giants reporter, A.J. Rovner. A.J., thanks for joining us here on this weekend.
Absolutely. I know it's through a little bit of a different medium tonight, but more than happy to always come on and talk some Giants football.
Well, the Rovner report here, I want to hear it all. The Giants made a decision, and they acted pretty quickly, and they got themselves John Harbaugh.
I mean, just what a monumental hire. It feels like it was Coughlin, you know, 20-plus years ago all over again. Remember, Coughlin took an expansion team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, all the way to the AFC Championship game. So bringing someone with that type of winning pedigree, 18 straight seasons as the Ravens head coach, I believe only one season with five wins or less. I mean, just a winner. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. Always in games. And the great thing about him is, you know, he has so many connections throughout the league. So I'm really hoping he can build a strong staff around himself. But nevertheless, definitely one of the brighter days as a Giant fan since 2011.
So why do you think this hire was the best? You know, I know that the Giants were thinking about, you know, bringing in some other coaches. The Falcons wind up taking the old Browns coach. But I think the Giants really put all their money right into this situation. And already it's been announced that he's going to be directly reporting to the owner. Why do you think it was Harbaugh's job?
Well, I think the Giants need someone that had a track record, right? I mean, Brian Daboll was a first-time head coach. And Joe Judge was a first-time head coach. And Mike Kafka, the intern, first-time head coach. So many of these guys, they just didn't have that experience. And I think the big piece for Harbaugh to come to New York to answer that back part of the question was he wants to be the head of everything. You know, I mean, just you've seen what Joe Shane has struggled with and the free agency signings and the draft bust, Evan Neal, Deontay Banks, of course, starts great and scat. But listen, the team that he inherited back in 2022 when the Giants were the flips, that really wasn't his roster. That was Dave Gettleman's team. And I think Harbaugh has to kind of see that. And he wants to take the reins. And he's getting paid a lot of money. I believe it's around $100 million. And for him to make that much and that be hired this quickly, he just wants to have full control of this roster, and that's what he's going to have.
So moves to the Giants from here. I think you got to be pretty happy that you have a coach in there. And then, you know, there were some young, bright spots this year that you hope to have healthy for next year. What do you think the Giants need to do now that they have a head coach in place? You first want to talk about the coaching staff. Do you want to talk about the draft, free agents?
Well, as I said in the open, I don't know the exact guys, but I know he has so many connections throughout the league, and that's what's key. And he can really build a dominant staff around him. You know, no offense to Brian Daboll, he didn't have as many connections, right? Not that 18 years of experience where you've had so many coaches in and out of the door. And I think the most important part of the entire offseason for New York is to figure out a defensive scheme with this much talent, especially on the front, that's going to work. I mean, when you have Kayvon Thibodeau on that last year of his deal now, that fifth year, Abdul Carter showed a lot of spark, Dexter Lawrence had a down year, and Brian Burns had almost 20 sacks, you really need to now figure out a coach on the defensive side of the ball that can get it done. And there's no doubt that with the fifth overall pick, I want the Giants to select Caleb Downs, the safety out of Ohio State. I think that's the best option. So really want the folks on the defensive end. I think the Giants know they have a lot on the offensive end they can be happy about. Dart's a great quarterback, as we know, and showed a ton of flashes. Scadaboo, Tracy, Neighbors. The offensive line was really good this year, so we really got to focus on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and I think you know, there were some bright spots towards the end of the year. We didn't talk the last few weeks, but the Giants were able to pull out a couple of wins, which put them, I believe, you know, in that spot you're talking about as far as drafting. But, you know, there's some spots in there that I think the Giants are ready to go, and then there's other spots that they were not competitive in. So I think, you know, some of those linebackers need to be replaced. I think you have to, number one, get yourself some wide receivers that are healthy and that are, you know, more serviceable than what they have, because you got to give Jackson Dart some more targets.
100%, and that's another key. You know, of course, Malik Neighbors, but how healthy is he going to be? We don't know, right? I mean, Theo Johnson has had his difficulties. Daniel Bellinger's not a pass-first tight end, more on the blocking side. And then we know Darius Slayton had his struggles. So who is going to be that guy is the question. So, I mean, the Giants' best pass catcher down the stretch, in my opinion, overall, is probably Tyrone Tracy Jr., the running back, because he came out of Purdue as a wide receiver. So, definitely, you know, if the Giants don't want to go with the Ohio State guy on the defensive side of the ball, I certainly want them to go with the offensive guy from Ohio State, and that would be Mr. Tate, the wide receiver. So, that's my hope, that they go somewhere Ohio State. Don't love him in college, but I'll certainly love him at Big Blue.
All right, AJ, I appreciate it. We're going to cut it short today, but good news for the G-men as Big Blue signs John Harbaugh. You know, I hear the excitement in your voice, and, you know, we'll talk about it as we get closer to the NFL draft. So thanks for coming on tonight.
Absolutely. All right, you be good, guys. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Okay. Appreciate that. That was AJ Rovner. We're going to transition as tonight we're using the cell phone, so we're going to make a phone call to our next guest, and we'll bring it right up. But, you know, again, Big Blue makes a nice decision. So we are going to transition here in just 1 second. Hello?
Hi, this is Donnie.
Hi, Donnie. This is Chris Caputo here at WGBB. We had a little bit of change tonight. So right now you're on my cell phone on speaker. The phone lines are down here. So right now you're on speaker going right into the mic. We are live on the air. Or maybe not on the air, but we're recording it for later. We had a little bit of a power outage here at the studio, but I appreciate you coming on, as I know you're traveling around the state of New York at this point, correct?
Yeah, we're up here in Buffalo. It's nice when we come up for this trip, we can stay in the same hotel for two games.
That's right. Okay, so we're talking with Donnie Lind, who's the head men's basketball coach at Mount St. Mary's in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Division One. This is his second year at the school, and part of being in the MAC, M-A-A-C, they get to travel around different parts of the Northeast and meet some of these teams. So talk a little bit about, you know, first year, you guys make it to the NCAA tournament, 23 wins, probably one of the best seasons. Talk a little bit about what it's been like the last year and a half at the school.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a little surreal. You know, you get your first chance to be a head coach at the Division I level, and, you know, those were not the expectations. You know, you certainly want to win. You want to, you know, put your best foot forward. But, you know, 23 wins and conference tournament championship and, you know, most wins in Division I history was certainly not on the bingo card for year one as a head coach. But, you know, certainly not going to apologize for it. And we had really good players, really good kids that bought in and stayed resilient throughout the year. And then, you know, then we dealt with what we all deal with at this level and putting a new team together for this year. And we were able to retain, you know, really two guys that played off of that team. A couple guys graduated. We had four guys that were, you know, kind of key contributors that transferred out. And then, you know, work toward building the new team for this year. And, you know, I think we ended up putting together a pretty good team. We dealt with a lot of injuries here in the first part of the season and haven't really been able to put our best foot forward all that often yet, but they're starting to get whole now and excited for the last month of the year.
So, Coach, you've been at different schools, including being an assistant at what they call the Mount. You spent 3 years there, and I've listened to a couple of times of you, you know, on different interviews. And, you know, one of the things you said is you didn't even, for the 3 years that you were there, really truly appreciate the atmosphere at the school and what it's like. And then when it came time, you were able to contact a couple of people in the department and say, hey, listen, like, you know, I saw this position is open. And I think that and your alma mater, Loyola, were probably the only two jobs you were looking at. And you found your way back there. Is it different the second time around?
I mean, it's certainly different in the sense of, you know, obviously being the head coach, you have a very different responsibility. But one of the cool things about the Mount is that it's a place that, you know, basketball is kind of in its DNA. Jim Phelan coached here for 49 years and 800 games. And, you know, got people in this, you know, I mean, we're not shy from it. We're in a remote rural part of Maryland to love college basketball. And so, you know, we have, you know, generations of fans who come to games. You know, grandparents bring their kids, who bring their kids to the games. And, you know, that's unique in the Division I landscape, in the mid-major landscape. And I didn't, like I said, like you said, I didn't necessarily realize or appreciate that as a, you know, 24-year-old assistant like I do now. You know, after being at some other places and seeing at, quote-unquote, better jobs, you know, what are they really better? You know, because of the support and the you know, fan base, and that hasn't changed. You know, the even though we have a new athletic director, even though we have a new president, though the fact that basketball is a huge part of what we do and is kind of in the core of the institution, so that hasn't changed. And so even though there's some different faces, they've been able to maintain that with our fans, with our administration, with our, you know, supporters, our boosters, all that. It gives you a chance at this level to be successful.
I'm talking with Donnie Lind from Mount St. Mary's, a small, under 2,000 student Division I school in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Coach, you were at some other schools like Radford and UNC Greensboro, and I believe you brought in a graduate student last year who you coached two schools ago, and you kind of told that kid that you wanted him to play for you senior year. And I know the previous school you were at, I think they told you you couldn't make a phone call when you first got there. So you waited an extra year. Describe what that's like now as you're, you know, you brought that player in for one year. You make it to the NCAA tournament. But for the most part, isn't your school one of those schools where everybody's calling and trying to grab people from the transfer portal now?
Oh, I mean, you know, we can't shy away from the reality of what's going on. You know, and yeah, it, you know, We want our players to have a great experience while they're here. You know, we're going to give them our best, you know, for the 9 months that we're guaranteed with them. And then, you know, they have if they give themselves an opportunity to, you know, do better for themselves, and that's what they want to do, you know, who am I to fault them for doing that? Honestly, now, you know, we can have pretty transparent conversations between coach and player, coach and family, about what the reality is in today's world. And, you know, yes, it's going to be difficult for us to retain our best players financially, if that's the number one most important goal for them when they're playing basketball. And again, I think I'm okay with that. If somebody called me and said, hey, I'm going to 6X your salary, I at least have to have that conversation with my wife.
Yes.
Right? Like, we have to talk about it. And now the players are in that same boat. So, you know, who am I to tell them not to have that conversation and not to hear that out? What our big fight is, and I think everybody at this level, is can we have some consistency in, you know, the middle of our lineup? Can our, you know, our fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh best player, can they stay for another year to become our top three players and develop in the way that we're doing things? You know, that is the big fight in retention. It's not, unfortunate to be, our fans would love it if we could always keep our best player, but that's probably not going to happen. You know, but can we be creative enough, and can we have good enough relationships, and can we, you know, really lean into development both as a player and as a person enough that when that kid is, you know, our sixth man and he's a sophomore and he has an opportunity to maybe go up slightly, you know, for a marginal more money, he realizes, you know what, that's probably not what's best for me long term.
Right.
And I should hold out, you know, become one of those top three players, become one of our best guys. And then you open yourself up to opportunities that you can't say
the next year, yeah. Yeah, that's a tough situation. You know, for a school like you, do you guys get any financial way of trying to bring guys in? Is that something that you guys are afforded to? I'm not saying you have, you know, Rapoli on the sideline like St. John's does, but do you have anything?
Yeah, we have some money now, especially with the house settlement and to be able to do revenue sharing. We're able to give our guys something, you know. We're not going to win bidding wars for guys. You know what I mean? We're going to be able to hopefully help them to be a little bit more comfortable while they're on campus here. But you don't come to Mount St. Mary's because, you know, I don't want you to come here because we give you $5,000 more than the other guy.
Right.
You know what I mean? We have to recruit guys that are okay with being at a school with 1,800 students, that being at a place, you know, where you're driving, you know, 20 minutes to go to Chipotle after practice. You know, and guys that are bought into becoming a great player and being a part of a great culture and being a part of a program that cares about winning. And then from there, you know, we can hopefully, you know, at least be in a ballpark with them financially that we can help them out and make it where they're, you know, like I said, comfortable while they're on campus and have the ability to, you know, they're afforded some luxuries that certainly the generation of players before them weren't.
We're talking with Donnie Lynn from Mount St. Mary's, who is now in the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, formerly in the NEC. Coach, this year they moved it back a little bit. I think I just heard the other day the transfer portal is not going to start till after the NCAA championship is done. Doesn't a school like you actually have a bigger job now to try and go get somebody else, knowing that, I mean, let's be honest, almost every athlete, every basketball player that's playing in Division I right now is thinking, even if they don't, they're thinking about entering the portal.
Of course.
Non-seniors. So doesn't that make your job even tougher? Because to me, the kid who loses out on this is the high school senior. They just don't seem to be getting enough looks. But for you guys, you have to go out there and be thinking about who might be the next guy that's going to come in as a sophomore and a junior and give you at least 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, right now, every season, you know, you have 1 year with that team, right? And they're, you're only promised 1 year with those players. And so, you know, our job right now, right, is to devote as much as we can to try to get the most out of this year's team. And, you know, we certainly, my staff and I, that's what we're focused on right now. And then as we get into March, you know, and then, you know, we start to get a feel for what our team is going to look like next year. And we can kind of evaluate, hey, what are we going to actually need? You know, right now you sit there and we've done it as a staff. You sit there and you meet and you say, well, hopefully we can keep these three or four guys, you know, who are maybe like on the fence, but you don't know. We don't know until that portal opens and they make a firm decision.
So yep.
It certainly is hard.
Yeah.
But it's different, right? And, you know, I'm not one to complain about my job. I got a pretty cool job. I really love it. I get to, you know, coach basketball every day and get to work with some pretty cool young men. But yeah, the hardest thing for me is, you know, there's an aspect of nurturing and developing young people.
Yep.
That is a part of why you get into coaching. And what we've always had the luxury as coaches of having, you know, 4 years was always the ideal, but you knew you had several years to build a relationship with a player. And during the course of building that relationship, you can make an impact on their lives.
Right.
Now you got 9 months. And so I have to be so intentional with trying to help these guys in every conversation and every chance you get, because there's no luxury of time. And so, you know, while we're trying to figure out how to, you know, score against Niagara tomorrow, we're also trying to help these guys grow and help them become the type of people that, you know, they want to be and help them grow up. And so there's all this going on at the same time, whereas that's the biggest change for me, is that now all of a sudden you just have to be so much more intentional with the time that we have with this group as a team.
So, Coach, you have said in the past that as an assistant coach, you felt like one of your best things was you were able to relate to the kids and get into them and have conversations with them and then, you know, develop them on the basketball court. And you're kind of that nerd geek where you were able to, as you said, FITFO. You know, as a head coach, have you been able to FITFO pretty much what you need to do right now?
I like to think so. I like to think that's something that I'm not going to lose. You know, it's a very different job. And, you know, everybody tells you that when you're coming up in the business. But until you get an opportunity to do it, it's, you know, I've had to give up some of the things that I really enjoy about being an assistant in order to try to be the best head coach I can be. And, you know, as the person who, you know, makes all the final decisions and is leading the organization now, you know, you have to be able to adapt and think on the fly and make decisions that you know, that with whatever amount of information you have available to you are the best you can make. And, you know, that involves a lot of, you know, trusting your gut and trusting the work that you've put in before as an assistant and with the team that you have had before and the team you have now. And then you just gotta pull the trigger and make the decision and go for it. And, you know, thankfully we got a group here, staff and players that are really bought into us being good. And they're willing to, you know, whatever we decide, they're willing to run with it. And, you know, we're pretty agile where we can pivot, you know, when we need to. And so that's the fun part about, and I think, shoot, a lot of the things we get to do is that we get to try it and, you know, hopefully it works out for us with the best, you know, make great decisions, but they're not all going to work. And, you know, we give ourselves the freedom to fail, the freedom to make some mistakes and then try to, you know, respond the right way, just like we want our players to.
For those of you that don't know, FITFO means figure it the F out. And, you know, I think you actually probably then can tell your assistant coaches, instead of giving them the manual of what you did, that a lot of things they're probably going to have to figure out on their own as well, correct?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, I don't want to do my assistant's job for me. You know, all of us who have worked, everybody's had a boss, and we've all had bosses that, you know, micromanage the heck out of us. We've had bosses that have given us the freedom to, you know, figure out how to do our job the best way we know how. And those are the bosses that I thrived under, and those are the ones that's the type of boss I want to be. Well, and so, you know, now I have a crew that can do that.
Yep. We don't have that much time. We only have about a minute, but if you were to change one thing, NIL, transfer portal, anything about college basketball at this point, what would you do to make it a little bit easier on the players and the coaches?
I mean, if I could just snap my fingers and do it, you know, I would have some sort of a salary cap by tier, like a tiered salary structure for, you know, high majors have a floor and a cap, mid majors have a floor and a cap, low majors have a floor and a cap, and then allow conference realignment, you know, let schools opt into whichever cap they want to be in, whichever tier, and then, you know, kind of realign conferences that way, and then you can maybe have a little bit more competitive balance around college basketball.
Yeah, and I've listened to Calipari say you got 5 years to play four. I have one thing that I would like to see, and that is if a kid transfers from one school to another, that school now owes that school some type of transfer fee, because it's almost like a buy-in game, you know what I mean? You're able to, you know, you're able, at this point now, you're able to take some of that money and put it into buying new players.
Yeah, no question. It would be a great help to the people who are losing their guys, for sure.
Yeah. Well, Coach, I appreciate you giving us a couple of minutes. I know we're short on time. Good luck up at Niagara. Hopefully the weather stays decent for you up there. Get home safe, and maybe we'll talk soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Chris.
All right. That's Donnie Lynn, the head coach from Mount St. Mary's. Tonight, we also had Coach Rob Krimmel. We had A.J. Rovner on. It was a fun night. We were able to do it a little bit differently on a cell phone. Brian Graves on the other side of the glass. Hopefully, we'll talk to you guys in a couple of weeks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
This is WGBB AM 1240 and W240 DF FM 95.9 Freeport, New York.